The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 153.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Hi, guys. Welcome to today's live stream. And I want to remind everyone to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. That is my online membership site where I work with Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. They are the pros. And it's this online forum with like-minded individuals, people just like you, trying to figure this stuff out and wondering if we're going to have inflation, deflation, and just trying to answer those difficult questions so that you can build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. And especially with what we got going on right now, these crazies at the World Economic Forum. Are you kidding me? Did you guys just see that tweet that I put out with the World Economic Forum and their agenda where they don't want anybody to own anything? They want us all to rent. And then they've, look at this. I'm not making this up. Like it sounds like straight tinfoil hat stuff. This is straight from their Twitter page. This is them talking, not me. Here, let me pull up this tweet. These people are complete psychopaths. And I give them the finger. Because that's exactly what they are, and that's exactly who they are. And you know me, I'm not one to use profanity or any type of vulgarity. But hey, if anything deserves the middle finger, that does. Read that. You'll own nothing, and you'll be happy. That's I didn't Photoshop this. That's from their Twitter site, World Economic Forum, blue check mark right there. That's their words. You'll own nothing and you'll be happy. Listen, guys, if there was ever a time in human history where you need to fight these central planners and these globalist, these global elites with these Marxist agenda, and you need to stand up for free market capitalism and individual liberty, that time is now. I mean, we all need to be rebel capitalists. We all need to rebel against this nonsense. And we need to do it together. And we need to expose, you know, sunlight's the greatest disinfectant. We need to get these people out. We need to tell our friends and family members that this is going on. We need to show them this nonsense. And then, of course, we need to combat this with intellectually rigorous debate. We have the facts on our side. History is on our side. So we need to combat this assault on free market capitalism and our personal liberties with facts, history, and rigorous intellectual debate. And that's, I think, the best thing that we can all do right now to be a rebel capitalist and know that the future is going to be just as good, if not better, than the past for our kids, our grandkids, and our great-grandkids. And if these people have their way, we're headed straight to a socialist utopia. And you know as well as I do that that ends not in a utopian state, but a state of pure dystopia. We go right to Orwell, 1984, and we're all equal, we're all equally poor. That's where we're headed if we don't stand up for what we believe in right now. We all need to be rebel capitalists. I'll get off that rant for right now. But all right, so let's get to the questions. That's why you're all here. All right, so Snyder says the Fed is not able to inject money, only bank reserves. How about the ECB? Top economists say the state issues bonds and the banks buy them. No, the ECB, but yeah. So you're talking about monetizing the debt. So I think really what you need to focus on is the commercial banking system and the liabilities and deposits in the commercial banking system. That's it. I mean, we can sit here and go back and forth about bank reserves and M2 and broad money and base money. And it just gets, you start chasing your tail. We just need to focus on the deposits in the commercial banking system because that essentially is what is there to chase goods and services. And because really your question is about inflation, deflation. And so I think that when the Fed monetize, or any central bank monetizes the government's debt, that is increasing the bank reserve, or excuse me, the deposits in the commercial banking system. And I think that's what we need to be focused on. So how do you do that? Well, you look at the deficits of the governments, and then you look at how much of that deficit, or how many of those bonds, treasuries, in the case of the United States, the Fed. That's monetizing debt. So that basically 100% of that is going to be increasing the deposits in the commercial banking system. Right. So, I mean, there's a debate as to whether the cash comes off the balance sheet. For the Brent Johnson would argue that it does. And that's a fantastic argument. But again, I think that's getting a little bit too far into the weeds. It does increase or decrease or remain the same, the bank deposits or the deposits and liabilities of the commercial banking system? So again, let's focus on the Fed's balance sheet. Let's focus on the government debt. And what percentage of the newly issued government debt is being purchased by the central bank? And that leads to the next question, which is increasing the deposits in the commercial banking system. And therefore, the next question is velocity. And then that's more of a psychological question. So that's how I think it through. What implications do you think that California exodus for the state of California economics, demographics? Yeah, I think it just turns into Argentina. I just interviewed Doug Casey, where we actually talked about California, Washington, and Oregon actually trying to secede, and that being kind of the next civil war, if you will. And I think it's Argentina, because they have their own debt. They have huge social welfare state that they really can't afford, because all the producers would be checking out. It's so fast it'd make your head spin. And they just inflate away the currency. They just keep doing that. So you're just looking at an Argentina, basically. Okay, what do you think of Time Magazine's array of articles to support Klaus Schwab, the Great Reset? Propaganda is really heating up for central bank digital currencies, globalism, and centralized control. Tell me about it. I think I really get worked up about this stuff, Johnny. But I totally agree. I mean, this is getting insane. This is proper insanity. I mean, this is Mussolini stuff. This is Stalin, Mussolini, and I won't name any others because I'm sure the video would get demonetized. But you guys know, where this is straight dictator stuff. So if you have to rent everything, then who do you rent it from? Oh, well, you rent it from Klaus in Bigglesworth, of course. I mean, this is straight Bond villain, Spectre. This is stranger than fiction. It is. It is straight from a James Bond movie, what we're seeing play out right in front of our own eyes. All right. And that's, you'll really get me going there, Johnny. Okay, Richard says, what do you love and what do you hate about Puerto Rico? Is it safe? It's just like any other place, Richard, from a standpoint of safety. I mean, just like the United States, it's just like Phoenix. It's just like, you know, there's some places where you go and it's not safe, you would want to go there at night. And then there's other places that you don't even have to lock your front door. It's like that in most places in the world. As far as what I like about it, I mean, Act 2022, the tax savings, first and foremost. And I like being in that area because you have so many other countries within a half a day boat ride. I mean, you can just shoot down to St. Barts. You can shoot over to the Dominican, to Cuba, for that matter. The way things are going with these crazies at the World Economic Forum, I mean, Cuba may be our last hope. As crazy as that sounds, but no, seriously, you're just a stone's throw from all these other countries, and I like that. So if it hits the fan, you can just hop in your boat or hop in your plane and just, boom, you're out. So I like the mobility standpoint. And then if the golf courses down there are great too. I mean, even if you're not a big golfer, like the Ritz-Carlton and the St. Regis, gorgeous, 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 right on the beach. And so if you like that type of resort living, you'd really enjoy it there. What do I not like about Puerto Rico? The water sports, the snorkeling, the surfing, the water sports are fantastic. Kite surfing is amazing there. I don't like the fact that they're just buying into this. I shouldn't say they are, because that's painting with too broad of a brush. But there's a vocal minority there that's really buying into this Marxist nonsense. And it's the same. It's this Hugo Chavez battle cry that we know what that did to Venezuela. And it's that same group. You know, they look at people coming in, entrepreneurs and producers, as the enemy, as imperialist, as colonialists. And there's no getting through to them, because they're just like brainwashed drones that just they don't think for themselves. It's like the people that you see them and it's like the cartoons where their eyes are just these spirals that are just they're like zombies. And all they can do is just regurgitate these bumper sticker sayings from these Marxist groups that have brainwashed them. So I'm not a big fan of that. But fortunately they're a very vocal minority in Puerto Rico. And right now the way they're handling this this lockdown stuff is bananas. It's unbelievably draconian. I mean, they've got cops on every corner just watching you to make sure that you're wearing a mask outside, walking your dog. You could be 400 yards away from the nearest person, but there's a cop that's going to yell at you and blow their whistle. Put on your mask, put on your mask. I mean, it's proper police state. Like I'm saying, this is straight Stalin and Mussolini and, you know, the other list of characters. It's just playing out right in front of our own eyes. They're doing the same thing in Australia. They're doing the same thing in New Zealand. It's just unbelievable, the assault on our personal liberties. So I don't like that. But, I mean, back when I spent a lot of time there in 2013, 2014, it was a great place. I really enjoyed it. But right now, it's not somewhere I'd want to spend a lot of time. I think hopefully moving into next year, things will change dramatically. But that said, I think it'd be a good idea for you to set up a company there and to take advantage of Act 2022, because that's a contract that you have for the next 15 years. And you don't necessarily have to take advantage of it right now, as long as you get grandfathered in. And then hopefully if they go back to their senses after this whole cerveza sickness thing, then you can spend time there and actually take advantage of those tax opportunities with Act 20 and 22.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com gammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Okay, when will the massive short position on bonds be cleared out? Obviously, yields are going lower. Would this be next crash sometime in 2021? What are the implications? Hold USD. I don't know if I'd be so confident about that, Chris. Yeah, they could go lower. They might not. I definitely wouldn't call it 100% that they're going lower. I don't know if you watched my video Friday night, Chris, but let's remember that interest rates are at 5,000 year lows, going back to 3000 BC. And yes, I had a chart going back to 3000 BC. And if interest rates have an inverse relationship to the price, which they do, we can say that if interest rates are at 5,000 year lows, then bond prices are at 5,000 year highs. So what you're saying is basically in 2006, you're the guy that's saying housing prices are going to continue to go higher. You're the guy that in 1999 said that keep buying .com stocks because they're going to go higher. They're definitely going higher. Maybe. I mean, you would have been right in 99. You would have been right in 2006 for a time. But that doesn't mean that it would have been a prudent thing to do to go long housing or to go long .com stocks during those times. Remember, I'm not going to tell you guys what to do, but as far as the way I invest personally, you just buy whatever's cheap and sell whatever's expensive, period. You don't worry about where the price is going, or in this case, the interest rates are going. And if you know, you're going to get them wrong, but over the long run, if you're just betting with those probabilities, if you got that edge, then you're going to miss tops, you're going to miss bottoms, but you're going to come out ahead. And it just goes back to blackjack, right? So just start with that question and look at the bond market. And there's absolutely nothing cheap about the bond market right now. Okay, here's a real estate question. For who is investing in real estate for cash flow, do you see the necessity in the near future to lower the asked rent? I never found so difficult to find right tenants. Well, you might have the wrong property, Ivana. I mean, it's all about location. And I don't know where you are or where your properties are, but with as little supply is on the market, if you've got a great single family house in a starter home that's in a great neighborhood and a great school district that's got a good rehab, that the landscaping's good, the curb appeal is there, and you can't get a renter, and that's not, you might not have the right property is what I'm trying to say. Now, could what's going on with the Cervasa sickness be affecting that? Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think people's stimulus checks ran out, and maybe that's now going and being felt more heavily by the landlords in your area. That very well could be. And let's see, I'm trying to think what I would do if that was the case. Yeah, I mean, if you've checked all the boxes that I was just talking about, I would probably lower my rent by $50. To get the right renter in there. That's probably what I'd do. And I don't know if that's your direct question, but I'm trying to just think through if I was in your shoes. And I'd try to get them in there, and I'd try to get them to do like a two-year lease. What are your must and must nots? Okay, when buying Fords 92, 97, well, you don't want to mess with the 92s. You really want to just stick with the, I mean, it depends on what engine, because Fritz, they started doing the 7.3 by International in 94 and a half. So with the 7.3s, you really want to mess with just the 95 to 97s. And occasionally you can find a good 460. It's a 94, but you know, once you get into the 92, the body style is a little different. The windows on the extended cab had like a split in them, I think, or that might've been 91, 92, something like that. But I always just stuck with the 95s and 97s and those OBS body styles. And those are really popular right now. And then I'd go up to the 99 to 2002 73s. I didn't mess with any of the gas motors because those V10s were garbage. The last good gas motor they made was the 460. So, you know, you can get them super cheap in California because gas is so expensive. And you get them cheap in California, you know, pretty them up and then put them on eBay. And then you get guys on the East Coast that really like those trucks where gas is a lot cheaper, but they've got the big problem with rust. And everyone out there wants a rust-free truck. So they're going to pay a premium for that. And so then you just pocket the spread. So what are my must and must nots? Well, I don't know if I have any must or must nots, but I think just make sure that you're sticking with the right year. Make sure you're doing your comps. Make sure you don't overpay. And then make sure that you always remember that you're making your money on the buy side. Always got to make your money on the buy side. Okay, let's see. All right, so George, have you ever looked at company Ripple XRP? It's the third biggest crypto. Be interested in your thoughts. You should definitely start paying more attention to the space. Yeah, I think I'm kind of old school when it comes to my investing strategy. I don't know why. Maybe it's because my father was so old when I was born. I don't know. Maybe that just rubbed off on me for some reason. For those of you who don't know, when I was born, my father was 59, and my mom was 32. So I got it says a lot about my my father. he was. There's not a day that goes by that I don't remember him with very fond memories. That's for sure. But anyway, okay. Ripple and XRP. You know, I just see them as speculations. I see the crypto space as speculative. And I only like to allocate about 10% of my portfolio to speculation. And there's a lot of speculations that I like, such as uranium, copper, a lot of the commodities. So I'd rather own those than Ripple, because I want to keep a piece of my portfolio allocated to Bitcoin. Now, you may say, George, oh, that's stupid. Ripple is going to go up 1,000 times more than copper or blah, blah, blah. And you may have a great argument for it, but you got to remember, I don't like buying a dollar for $3 and hoping it goes to five. I like buying a dollar for 50 cents. You see? So what you're doing is you're trying to guess on what's going to happen in the future. And now I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying that's not my game. I prefer to not try to guess what's happening in the future. I just try to look at what is right now and then buy something that has X value right now for X minus Y. You see? And so I think that's the best way I can answer your question. I want to be clear. I'm not saying that Ripple or XRP is bad. It could be fantastic. And I think there's a great bull argument for it. It's just my personal preference and the way I've got my portfolio set up. It's not conducive to that right now. That could change. That could change in the future. I'm very open-minded, and I am not married to any one idea. I like to be agnostic when it comes to my investment ideas, but that's kind of where I am right now. And keep in mind, guys, one of the things that I'm doing for Rebel Capitalist Pro and for other things is, and for my website, is I'm going to be investing $100,000 of my own money, and I'm going to do it from A to Z. So it's going to start with even setting up the brokerage account with Interactive Brokers, and just, you know, here's what I'm doing for research. Here's the stocks, or here's what I'm buying, and here's why. And then you can see me just click on every single thing, and then we'll just have that portfolio. We'll see what it does, and you guys can watch if I make any changes, which I most likely won't. I usually just keep things forever. I like collect these things. So, but just keep that in mind, because I think that'll help people really understand my process a lot better. Do I like any non-commodity value stocks at this point in time with good yields? Tough to return environment. Lacey Hunt does not see much inflation in his most recent note. Tobacco. I guess there's a great argument to have ethical issues with tobacco. Obviously, I don't smoke and I don't like it. But if you're asking for a, you know, last time I looked at Altria, it was yielding like 8%. And that's pretty darn good. And it's the number one performing stock since 1968, Altria. It's not tech, it's not Tesla, it's not Google, not Facebook. Nope. Good old Altria. And the best performing sector since the 1990s is tobacco. So, and obviously it's unloved, very contrarian. And we're talking about being a rebel capitalist. I think the times in my life where I've made the most money, it's where I tell people about the idea and they tell me that I'm crazy. That all the things I've done in my investment life where I've lost money, I've told everyone about it and they say that it's a great idea. So that's the first step. If you tell your friends and family member Fred, or friend and family member Fred, about the idea, and he says, oh, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. No one wants to do that. I might look into it further. But a friend and family member Fred says, oh, I think that's a great idea. I want to invest in that as well. I'm hitting my mouse button. I'd hit the bid. I'd sell, like stupid Kramer always says. That's where I do the sell thing. That's for sure. Yeah. I mean, Will, this is a great question. How can you grow income at real inflation rate? Fed and government want nominal values to keep rising, even if real value is down. If your income can't rise, then rising prices will leave you poorer. Bingo. Hit the nail on the head. In fact, that calls for this. I want to thank my great buddy, Jason Hartman, who sent me the sound machine. So, Will, that's a great question, and you get the official. You get the official. Jeez, that thing lasts way too long. Thanks a lot, Hartman. I appreciate it, buddy. You're awesome, man. You're awesome. But that's the problem with inflation. Is the cost of goods and services usually inflate faster than your income. And the income is kind of like a lagging thing. And that's if it, you know, usually over time, the income will kind of catch up. And so the real real incomes kind of stay the same. But it depends on how much inflation there is. I mean, that was the problem with the 1970s, one of them. Is that you know, the price of goods and services go up and the incomes don't go up as fast. They call it the pain measurement or the pain metric or something like that, or they called it with unemployment and the rate of inflation. They put those two things together. But that's why we want sound money, Will. That's why we want Bitcoin. That's why we want gold. That's why these things are good, because it takes the power away from the governments and the central planners to continually inflate away our purchasing power and make us poorer in the process as they enrich themselves through the Cantillon effect. Just what I've been saying in my videos. You know, they're closest to the spigot, so they get all that money prior to inflation going up, whether it's consumer price inflation or asset inflation. So they get the benefit and they just screw all of us and leave us holding the bag. That's what's happening. And that's what happens in a fiat money system, and where you've got where the governments have a monopoly on the creation of money. And that's, we need to take it back. And that's, you know, probably the best thing that we can do to rebel right here, to be a rebel capitalist and rebel against these central planners and the World Economic Forum. We got to start with sound money, period. And whether that's gold, Bitcoin, silver, whatever, we got to start with sound money. That almost immediately takes the majority of their power away. So how can you grow your income better? You see, it's really tough because what it makes you do is it turns you into a speculator. So in order to keep up with that inflation, in order to maintain your purchasing power, you can't just keep your money in the bank. So you're forced to gamble. You're forced to buy Tesla. You're forced to buy WeWork and SoftBank and private equity and all these things that are very speculative. It forces people further out the risk curve. It also forces your pension fund further out the risk curve. And that doesn't end well because we live in an imperfect world and we're imperfect creatures. And you keep going further and further out the risk curve. And at some point, you're going to get hurt. You're going to lose all that money. I mean, you got to own some gold. And if you have a mortgage, Will, you got to make sure that it's a fixed rate 30-year mortgage. Because then what you're going to be doing is you're going to be gaining purchasing power while through the loan, because you're paying it back with cheaper dollars, you see, while you're probably losing purchasing power with your income. I think that's your best hedge, is to have some gold and have a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. What foreign countries do you like for investing? I think Chris McIntosh, one of my partners in Rebel Capitalist Pro, just hits the nail on the head. What he's doing and what I'm taking his lead on this is just looking at countries that don't benefit from this wacky agenda that the global elites are trying to push down our throats. So that would be countries like Russia, countries that benefit from oil, as an example. So that would be Russia, Saudi Arabia, countries like Brazil. I noticed you mentioned Brazil there. These are countries that don't benefit from this push towards Marxism. Also, the countries around Russia, such as former Yugoslavia, right around Croatia, but I love Croatia, that's for sure. But most of these countries, a good percentage of the population, obviously the baby boomers were, they remember socialism. They lived through it. And trust me, once you live through that hell, you never, ever, ever want to go back. And I know this because a lot of my employees in Colombia are from Venezuela. And they fled Venezuela to get away from Chavez, Maduro, and hyperinflation and socialism. They get it. They see what happens when these central planners try to push this agenda of a socialist utopia. They've seen the horror that it produces. And I mean, not that you guys can have the access to my employees, but trust me, you sit a lot of times when this comes up, they really get angry when let's say someone in the comments or something like that says, oh, Venezuela is not that bad, or not that I get that comment a lot, but when they see something that even references back to Venezuela, I mean, you can see them, they get angry because they know what they gave up. They know the life that was stolen from them and from their kids and from their grandkids and from their parents because of the insanity of central planning, and they want nothing to do with it for the rest of their lives. They've been scarred mentally, emotionally, and they don't get over that. So my point is, you've got a lot of people that fall into that category that are now living not only in Russia, but those countries around Russia. And you know, you try to push this Marxist agenda on them, and they'll tell you to pound sand, and that's putting it mildly. They want nothing to do with it, nothing. And so although those countries, I would, you know, right now, if you just take a snapshot in time, those countries aren't as technologically advanced, or they might not be as nice, quote unquote, as the United States. You've got to look and you've got to skate to where the puck is going, not where the puck is now. And that's that Wayne Gretzky quote. But so if we skate to where the puck is going, if we look at the trajectory of the political narrative in specific countries. The political narrative here in the West is, and especially in Europe right now, or in that part of Europe, you know, where the Eurozone, just bonkers, complete bonkers. Australia, New Zealand, these countries have just completely gone off the deep end. But then if we look at the narrative in these other countries I was referring to, they're trying to embrace more free market capitalism. They're by no means perfect, that's for sure. But they're trying to move closer towards private property rights and small government and more personal liberties and free market capitalism. So that's where I'm more bullish. And it's just fortunately, you know, this narrative that we see from the World Economic Forum is not embraced by every country. It is by a lot, especially in the Western Europe area. But unfortunately now, Australia, New Zealand, and a lot of the United States, but that doesn't include the entire world. Also, Asia. I think you talked about the Vietnam. Yeah, Vietnam, same thing. They understand what communism is. They get it. And I would assume most of them don't want any part of it. So kind of Asia, the Middle East, up into Russia. I think, although they're suboptimal right now, I think they're at least hopefully going in a different direction. And that's a direction that I would be more bullish on long term. So yeah, kind of same question. Are you bullish on India, Russia, Africa? There are countries in Africa that I'm bullish on, and I'm really excited for, well, that's an understatement, for Cervasus to be behind us so I can start traveling again and getting out there and be like my indirect mentor, if you will, Jim Rogers. And I think Jim and I are very similar in spirit, and I would like to think so. I mean, maybe I'm putting myself in too high of a level. Obviously, I'm not saying I'm at Jim's level at all, but I am saying that both of us kind of like to get out and experience some adventure and do some investing along the way. And I'd really love to do that in Africa. I'm really excited about touring a lot of those countries and, you know, doing whiteboard videos from who knows, you know, Tanzania or any of these other exciting places. And maybe I do a vlog as well. But anyway, yeah, so there are some countries in Africa I like. Russia, I talked about. Their balance sheet's fantastic. Obviously, they're not perfect. They've got a lot of problems, but it's not, there are no perfect countries right now. You're just trying to find the cleanest dirty shirt in the hamper. And so I like their balance sheet. India, yeah, I mean, there's some countries around India that I might like a little bit better, more kind of the smaller countries that will maybe benefit between the trade between India, Russia, China, and then the Middle East, that I would probably want to look at before I looked at India. Do you think San Francisco is permanently damaged, or is it just in a dip before extraordinarily bullishness? I'm not bullish on San Francisco. I guess it's a matter of timing. I don't know whether you're talking about the next 6 months or the next 60 years, but I'm not bullish on San Francisco. I don't know how you could be bullish on anything in California right now. Just, you got to think about this. And I touched on this on my video Friday night. If you're bullish on San Francisco, what is that saying, really? Because if there is no artificially low interest rates, there's no San Francisco. None. San Francisco, if the Fed hadn't come in and dropped interest rates, if we didn't have the Fed put, if we haven't been on a down cycle in interest rates for 40 years, and if the Fed if we just had market rates, as an example, there would be no, I'm not saying there wouldn't be a San Francisco, there would be, but San Francisco would be Sacramento. It would be San Diego. It wouldn't be this hub of technology and all these companies that don't make profit. The only way that those companies can stay afloat and not have to worry about profit is because there's artificially low interest rates. Everyone is starving for yield, and the Fed has pushed everyone out the risk curve. So you go further and further out the risk curve, and all that money that's searching for a return ends up in San Francisco or Palo Alto or Silicon Valley. And I'm not saying that it wouldn't exist. You know, it would be there, but it sure as heck would, the real estate prices would be half of what they are right now. So you see, my point is that if you're bullish on San Francisco, you're bullish on the Fed. If you're bullish on San Francisco, you're bullish on central planning. You're bullish on the Fed's ability to continue to increase asset prices and continue to blow up asset bubbles, because that's directly tied to how well or how poorly San Francisco does in the future. You're going long socialism. You're going long central planning. You're going long Klaus. You're going long the World Economic Forum if you're going long San Francisco. So I'm personally very bearish on San Francisco because I'm bearish on central planning. I'm bearish on socialism. I'm bearish on Marxism. And therefore, I'm bearish on California. You see, so I think my point is, when you're looking at a geographical location, I think you have to also analyze what has got that geographical location from a macro standpoint to where it is today, and what are the probabilities of that environment continuing on indefinitely into the future. So that's how I look at San Francisco right now.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Why does the world need swap lines if there's euro dollars? If there's a euro dollar system? So Joe Biden asked that question. Joe, thanks for having the mental wherewithal to actually figure out how to be on my live stream, buddy. I'm actually pretty shocked that you figured out how to actually type in that question. I'm even more shocked you came up with that question. I think one of your speech writers must have come up with that question for you. So the reason they're trying to use these swap lines is to get around the fact that the euro dollar system itself is broken. Because you've got a great point that we shouldn't need swap lines, that the euro dollar system should be providing the dollars. The commercial banking system outside the United States should be providing those dollar denominated loans to those corporations. But the problem is no one wants to lend them money because they know those corporations are insolvent, because it's not a liquidity problem. It's a solvency problem. And when your cash flows dry up, you got no cash flow. It doesn't matter how liquid you are. You're bust. And so none of the banks want to create dollars or euro dollars to lend to these guys because they know that they're going out of business. So then the Fed comes in. They don't know what to do. So they set up these swap lines, just makeshift, and oh, just hope and pray, or maybe there's something a little more malicious, but we'll just take it at face value that they're just trying to throw everything up against a wall to see what sticks. The problem with the swap lines, that goes to the central banks of the other countries, and then the banking system has to access those dollars to do what? Just create more dollar-denominated loans. Well, it's completely ridiculous. They don't need balance sheet capacity. You need a mechanism that's going to get dollars to the corporations that need them to stay afloat. But again, that's just temporary, because even if they did get the funding they need, it's just a little Band-Aid. It's just a little bit of shot of heroin to the heroin addict. After they get done with the temporary high, they're still going to go into horrible withdrawals because they're still a heroin addict. The swap lines or the dollars or the euro dollars or the additional loans or whatever, that doesn't cure them of the disease. They're still an addict. And the only thing that would cure an addict is if they go cold turkey. But no one wants to do that, because then you have to go through some serious economic pain to actually restructure the economy to where it wasn't addicted on all these monetary drugs. So it's a very good question, but that's the reason, because they don't need it, but they wouldn't need it if the euro dollar system was functioning properly. But as Jeff Snyder has shown us, the euro dollar system broke in 2008 and it's never been fixed. And we cannot have a structural recovery unless we fix the global monetary system and just create a new one. And those are Snyder's words, not mine. And Snyder's 10 times smarter than I'll ever be. So if you're not watching his show with Emil Kalinowski, another good buddy of mine, make sure that you're doing that. It's Making Sense. It's their show on YouTube, and it's a podcast. And it's a must watch. It's a must listen for sure. Do you wait post-election to buy real estate? I think it's all about the deal. It's all about the numbers. I mean, if you got a motivated seller right now and the numbers make a lot of sense, I would pull the trigger. I don't know. It's going to be tough to find something where the numbers make sense, because we're in such a massive bubble right now. Not to say that it's impossible, but it's tough. I mean, it's a little easier now that you can lock in a mortgage rate so low. That definitely helps the positive cash flow side of the equation. But I don't know that I'd let the election sway me one way or the other. People look at real estate as though it's, bam, it's just going to crash overnight. Even if we have a crash like we had in 2008 or so, you got to remember that real estate didn't crash by 50% overnight. It took from 2006 to 2012. It took 6 years to bottom. The real estate, it's like a big ship. It doesn't just turn on a dime. Just boop, turn the other direction. It takes a long time for it to come around. And because the sellers always think it's worth more, they're always looking in the rearview mirror, like Hartman says. And the buyers are always looking through the windshield. And a lot of times there's a big disconnect, and it takes time for the sellers to start dropping their prices and make a market. And that's a bitter pill to swallow. Now, it could be exacerbated. I think the great argument for it being shorter than 6 years because of what's gone on with the Cervasa sickness and unemployment. And if we don't get these stimulus checks, and I think we most likely will, but if that doesn't come to fruition, then I think there's a great argument for it compressing the time frame. But does that mean that it goes from 6 years to a month? No. No. That means it goes from like 6 years to 2 years or something like that. So just keep that in mind. Real estate's a little different beast there. It's not like the stock market, where we can just have a Black Monday where it goes down by 20% in one day. How long until we see a continuation of the gold commodities bull market? Seems to be sideways trading. Can they suppress prices and understate inflation indefinitely? Yeah. They've been doing it for a long time. They've been doing it since the 80s. So, yeah, they can definitely continue to understate inflation. I think it's pretty healthy, though, Raymond. You don't want something that just goes straight up. That's when you've got a mania. You look at Bitcoin back in, what was it, 2018? That's not healthy when it just goes, whatever, from 1,000 or 3,000 or just straight to 20,000. You don't want that. You're gonna have a big crash. It always happens that way when just everyone gets emotional and gets FOMO, and that's not a real healthy bear market. All the weak hands need to be pushed out to where the only people left are the people who won't sell. And then you see the price start climbing another wall of worry. I think that you also have to look at those two assets as different components of your portfolio. At least that's what I do. And I don't put gold and commodities in the same basket, because for me, gold is insurance and commodities are more of a speculation, or the producers, if they're paying a nice dividend, would be an investment because it's paying me to own it. But I don't look at gold that way. So lastly, one thing I would do to kind of help you weigh the probabilities on us being, or just taking a pause in a longer term bull market, or maybe the opposite, would be take a chart of M2 money supply. And I know it's flawed and it's not perfect, but I think just to kind of get an idea of where we are today compared to where we were in 2011, and I'm really focusing on gold here, is you look at the price, the nominal price of gold, and it's similar to where it was in 2011. But if you layer over a chart of M2, gold was here, I'm talking about 2011, gold was up here, M2 was down here, now M2 is way up here. So why is that important? Because and I don't want to say M2, I want to say the amount of currency units that are on deposit or liabilities of the commercial banking system has increased substantially since 2011. Therefore, there are more currency units that are available to chase that one bar of gold or several bars, gold coin or whatever. So that would mean that there's quite a tailwind to the price still. That said, it's all a psychological question. At what point are people going to really start hitting the bid on gold? What point are they going to lose confidence in the fiat currency system? No one knows. So that's why the only thing you can do is just not really try to worry about the price or the direction of the price, but more so ask yourself if it's cheap or if it's expensive. And I think that the gold miners and commodities are cheap, and especially when you look at M2 or the deposits in the commercial banking system. And I think that gold, for me, I don't even ask the question if gold is cheap or expensive, because I just buy it just because it fulfills a different objective in my portfolio, and that's just insurance. So for me, whether the insurance costs X or costs X or Y, I'm still going to buy it because I always like to have that insurance. Adrian asks, banks aren't lending. Fred data shows they continue to tighten. What do you think will trigger them to start lending again? A market correction, vaccine negative rates? I don't think they will, Adrian. I don't think, and this goes back to what Snyder was saying about the euro dollar market being completely broken since 2008. And that's why I think you've seen asset prices go up so much, and you might not have, you haven't seen as much consumer price inflation as one would have thought if you would have foreseen QE 1, 2, and 3, you know, say back in 2008 or something like that. It's, so why is that? Because the money that's been created has flowed into the financial system through financial engineering, because the banks aren't willing to lend to Main Street. They're only willing to lend to Wall Street because they think the risk reward is better. So And that's because of the Fed. It all goes back to the Fed and the central planners. So at what point do those banks say, okay, now we're willing to go back into the real economy? I don't think we get there. I don't think we get there. I think what's more likely to happen, Adrian, is for the Fed or the government to go around the banking system to where they are injecting or they're creating bank deposits in the commercial banking system themselves without needing the commercial banking system to create an additional loan to make that deposit. And I think they'll do that through the central bank digital currency, because we'll all have an account with the Fed. Hopefully we won't, but all the normies, your friend and family member, Fred, I mean, they'll sign up for it immediately. They can't wait to sign up for it. Why? Because they'll most likely get free Fed coins. And so they're going to want their free Fed coins. So they're going to download that app, which in the process is going to give them an account with the Fed or the XYZ central planner. And therefore, they're going to be able to see every single one of their transactions and aggregate that data in real time. And they'll also be able to issue loans directly. And since the Fed theoretically has an infinite balance sheet and they can take a haircut, maybe we get to the point where they issue those loans, those new loans, not based on your credit score or your ability to pay back the loan, but they do it on things such as a social score. So whether or not you get that mortgage doesn't have anything to do with the fact that you've got a 750 credit score if you've been caught on camera three or four times in the last month walking outside your house without a mask. Now you don't get that loan. Or if you do get the loan, it's at a 8% interest rate instead of a 3% interest rate. Now, will we go that direction? I sure as hell hope not. But I know a lot of people say, oh, George, that's too kind of tinfoil hat. Listen, cut me out of the equation. Go directly to the World Economic Forum's website. Read it straight from them. Don't listen to me. Come to your own conclusions. And then what people need to do is they need to put themselves in the position of being that. I know it's difficult to do for ethical people like everyone here on my live stream. It's hard for us to imagine having an insatiable lust for power and willing to do quite literally anything to fulfill that lust, that greed, that wanting to control other people. But if you're able to do that for a moment, you ask yourself, if I'm trying to get here, how do I get there? And that's what I do for a lot of my whiteboard videos. And if I'm Klaus and I want to get to this socialist utopia, this is exactly how I do it. I make sure everyone has an account with the Fed. I do the digital currency, and then I do exactly what I'm talking about. And then I aggregate all that data, and then I use AI, artificial intelligence, to allocate resources instead of price signals. Why does that matter? Because price signals are something we get. It's the data we get that's decentralized from free market capitalism. And that's one of the reasons, one of the main reasons why communism didn't work in Russia, because they couldn't allocate scarce resources with alternative uses because there were no prices. So they didn't have the data. They didn't know what to do with the blind leading the blind. But if I'm Klaus, I know that. I know that was a flaw with communism. But if I still want to achieve my socialist utopia, then that's how you do it. You make sure that you have enough data and they would have enough data because every single transaction in the United States would flow through the Fed because we all have bank accounts and every business has an account with the Fed, just like the primary dealer banks. So they're able to crunch all of this data through artificial intelligence in real time to allocate those resources. And then, of course, they want us renting everything. They don't want anything, they don't want people, individuals, just like you and I, they don't want us to own anything, zero. You have nothing. Everything you do, you have to, it's like being a child. You have to just ask permission from mommy and daddy state. You have to ask permission to have something or to rent something from the algorithm. And if the algorithm, if the artificial intelligence tells you you can have a car, then you can have a car. But if the artificial intelligence, if the algorithm says you can't have one, you're done. And whether you're religious or not, it's almost like they're trying to replace God with artificial intelligence. And I know that sounds crazy. And I trust me, I get it. But if I'm Klaus, just based on what he says on his own website, that's how I get it done. I get it done through the digital currency, through the central bank digital currency and artificial intelligence. That's how I get to the socialist utopia. Take that for what it's worth. Okay, guys. Sorry to end on such a cheery note like that. But, there's nothing to lose sleep over, but we need to be cognizant of this stuff and we need to fight it. And I'm not saying through violence. Don't get me wrong. I'm saying we need to expose this. We need to give it sunlight because no matter how blue-pilled your friends are, and your family members, if you show them that tweet from the World Economic Forum, say, look, you're gonna rent everything and be happy. It doesn't matter how blue-pilled your friends are, they're gonna be like, what? That is crazy talk. Like, what? I don't want anything to do with that. So we need to expose this. We need to disinfect it by getting these crazy ideas out in the open. And then combating these ideas with solid ideas of our own. So through rigorous debate that's intellectually honest and ethical and based on facts and history and human nature and what we know to be true. And focusing, I don't want to go off another tangent, but focusing on the family, the nuclear family, right? I mean, look at what they're doing. They're trying to replace the family with the state, with the government, with potentially artificial intelligence. They want to be the family. They want to destroy the what we've built our entire society on. And I want nothing to do with it. And so I think we all need to be rebel capitalists from that standpoint. And hopefully you'll join me on that mission. So anyway, okay, guys, and check out, that's a bad segue into the plug, but check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. You guys know the drill. It's at georgegammon.com/pro. If you want a way to try to maintain your wealth and preserve your purchasing power and increase your financial freedom as well as your personal freedom, it's a great place to do it. You can check it out now there's like a dollar trial. It's georgegammon.com/pro. But more importantly, be a rebel capitalist in your own life. Expose these terrible ideas, get them into the sunlight, and then combat them by educating your friends and family members on what you know is right. And that's free market capitalism. That's the focus on the family, first and foremost. It's decentralized power. It's limited government. And it's individual freedom and liberty. That just let's fight for that. So we'll leave it on that. And guys, I want to thank everyone for being here. We got the We got my sound effects. Yeah, and I got one here specifically for Klaus and all of his cronies at the World Economic Forum. Here's their official sound effect. That's the World Economic Forum sound effect for sure. And I want to thank everyone for being on till the end. We've got Joe Biden in the house himself. Joe, thanks for hanging out. Surprised you're still awake this time at night. I figured you'd be passed out from the dementia. All right, we've got Mara, Hurricane, Eric, hey, buddy. We'll see you in the member live stream here soon. I saw Arthur here as well. Arthur, what's up, buddy? Justin, Martin, Jordan, Alan, Mike, Alicia, Mr. Jeremy, Dickie Dunn, Leroy, Peter, Seymour, Jim, G. May, Eric Carlson, DD Crew, Isaac, Patty, Stanley, Fritz, EBC, Jay, it's really moving around on me, Bill, Paul, Jerry, John, Casey Burns Investing. Thanks for commenting so much, Casey. I always see you not only in the live streams, but in the comments of my videos. And you know, I'm not able to read all the comments. I try to read them for the first few minutes. And I always see you there commenting right when the videos come out. I really appreciate it. That's for sure. Alicia, thank you. Mike, Philip, guys, appreciate it. And I will see you on the next video. Enjoy your week.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.